broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio, and we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairways. We're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City. On today's show, we go digging around our very own backyard, the Brooklyn neighborhood where Groundworks is based, Gowanus, named for the infamous Gowanus Canal, our own oily patch of waterfront.
With a deep history.
Yes, very deep. In a story titled A Brief History of Slime, Christopher Bonanos in New York Magazine writes, "Once known as the Gas House District, the area around the Gowanus Canal is the only underdeveloped section of brownstone Brooklyn. For good reason. The canal is disgusting." Here's his description of the canal's foul past and potential future.
Future mean what we're going to talk about
today. Yes, exactly. According to his article, the canal was built in the mid-19th century where a creek once meandered and served foundries, coal yards, and paint and ink factories. In 1910, a local businessman was already describing the canal's water as almost solid with sewage. The next year, a 6,200-foot underground tunnel fitted with a 7-foot propeller was opened to flush the canal with fresh seawater. And that worked until 1961, when the pump broke. And then local lore says a city worker dropped a manhole cover on it.
I always wondered why it stopped.
Who knows?
Working.
Well, apparently, according to the article, it wasn't fixed until 1999, and it's supposed to be fully overhauled by the DEP. That's what I had read. Who knows? So anyway, what's in the canal? Also, according to this article, the industrial plants that line the canal handle just about every nasty thing that could end up in the water. Certain oily pollutants like coal tar that are customarily measured in parts per million are, in the Gowanus, measured in parts per hundred. Heavy metals like mercury and lead are present. So are PCBs and pesticides. And then we have to talk about the smaller life forms that are in there, the microbes. Cholera, typhoid, typhus, gonorrhea, they've all been found in the water. A team of biology professors at New York City College of Technology have also studied a curious white goo oozing along the bottom, which turned out to be a mixture of bacteria, protozoans, and various contaminants. And apparently, these microbes appear to have evolved resistance to the filth in the canal, and the scientists have been trying to figure out whether their disease-fighting mechanisms could be adapted for medical use. So there might be some good in that goo.
Goodbye, gonorrhea.
Clap. Anyway, today we have two great guests with us live in the studio, Jeff Hutchinson and Eric Martick, who work tirelessly with the Gowanus Canal Conservancy. Eric Martick is an Ohio native who grew up gardening, raising poultry, and working on a large-scale hay and grain farm. He moved to New York City in 2008 with a degree in landscape architecture and has worked at several landscape design offices. He currently manages Grow New York City's compost project and started the Gowanus Canal Conservancy's Composting Gowanus project in January 2011. Eric is a 2011 graduate of the New York City Compost Project's Master Composter Certificate course and has volunteered over 100 hours to the development of the Conservancy's compost project. So it's obvious that Eric has a passion for compost, including its microbiological benefit to soil and plants, as well as its future role as green infrastructure. Welcome, Eric.
It's good to be here.
And Jeffrey Hutchinson was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is probably a lot cleaner than the Gowanus Canal, right?
Slightly.
I'm sure there's an industrial canal through there somewhere.
Yeah.
Depends where you look.
It just looks so much more beautiful, I think.
It's a veneer.
Yes. He studied dance and psychology at the University of California before undertaking doctoral work in cognitive science at Brown University. He abandoned the academic world in 2008 for a new path. He now lives in New York City, where he gardens, dances, farms, and lives an artful life. His focus has shifted increasingly towards creating gardens and exploring the ecology of New York City, which manifests itself in his collaboration with Christina Kelly, called Husk, and a number of projects along the Gowanus Canal. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
So we have two composting experts here. Tell us a little bit about Gowanus.
Oh, well, you just made me think I don't want to ever go back there.
No, but you guys are doing excellent work to change all that negative.
Negative connotations.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's like at the precipice right now. It's like it's reached its low point, and now it's like, I guess it could get worse. There's always more that you could do to it, I'm sure. But it's at this point where it's starting to come back and it's becoming something new. So there's a lot of excitement there.
Yeah. Tell us about the Conservancy, what their basic mission is and what drew you all to work with it.
Well, we're an environmental stewardship nonprofit, so we're boots on the ground cleaning things up. Mm-hmm. The way that we know how. We're not experts at what we're doing, but we know that we need to get out there and start cleaning it up.
Right. So community effort.
That's right. So on a monthly basis, we do volunteer days where we bring kids down, give them shovels, give them trash bags, and let's go at it.
Mm-hmm. So. 'Cause there's a lot of kind of abandoned lots down there, and there's a lot of old car
parts,
fix-it places, and like
who knows what you're gonna find in the canal. We've pulled out shopping carts. You know, just what is going on. So
I mean, look, Bette Midler and her organization started with one patch at a time, and look what they've accomplished.
Right.
You know, in the 25 years. So we feel really good about what you guys are doing. So Jeff, we have, Alice and I have had a lot of artists working with us as gardeners.
There's such a collaboration between art and gardening.
Yeah. Tell us what kind of connection you see there and how it works for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's vast really, but, for me, it's sort of part of my personal history in terms of my family, a lot of gardeners and everything. So I've always had it as part of my life, but in terms of it coming up with and together with my artistic practices, it's just so amazing to watch a seed go through the whole process of sprouting and turning into a plant and growing along and developing fruit and on and on. And it's so sensorial. You have your sense of sight and taste and touch and feel. Everything's there. So there's just so much inspiration to draw from plants. And gardening, you know, taking those and putting them into a design and everything like that. You're really exercising so many artistic capacities in gardening. So.
And doesn't it seem like when you move to an industrial area, it becomes more of an emphasis? Even though you grew up with it, it just becomes more highlighted, like, oh my God, this place is lacking in nature and, you know, like you just want to be outside barefoot and you can't.
Yeah. I moved to New York City from living out in the Redwoods in Santa Cruz.
Oh my God.
I lived in a garage on a farm with a skylight looking up at Redwood trees. And then I moved to Carroll Gardens with a view of the BQE.
Yeah.
So it really, for me, there was really a point where I was like, I just have to, if I can plant a tree, if I can raise a tomato, like anything that I can do in the city to bring a little bit more green to it.
Yeah.
Like I just have to do that. I have to find ways.
I got obsessed with houseplants and my roommates were like, stop bringing houseplants home because I didn't have an outdoor space. But I was like, I need this green and these vines and, you know, something. And it's crazy how the lack of something really emphasizes the need for it.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Eric, you're also, besides working with the Gowanus Conservancy, you also work with Grow New York City's Compost
Correct.
Project. So tell us about what they do in the city and what their goals are.
Well, Grow NYC has 53 green markets throughout the city. And at seven of those markets, we do residential scrap collection. And then that's sent to a commercial facility where it's composted.
By the sanitation department? Do they do
no,
it? Or
it's,
no,
it's commercially hauled.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So we've collected over 300,000 pounds of scraps since the beginning of March.
Wow.
But, you know, that's small peas when you think about the 1 million tons of material
I
every
know.
Year in New York City that
I
goes
read,
into
I
the
landfill.
I read, I
think a statistic was 60% of our waste is compostable. Does that sound right to you?
That sounds a little off from my view. I believe it's 17%.
Oh, really?
Which is still a phenomenal amount of
right,
waste.
Right, right. Yes.
Maybe it's recyclable.
Yeah, maybe that includes recyclable.
Yeah, that's probably.
So food scraps make up about 17%.
17%, yes.
Of our waste.
Right. Yeah.
And there are a number of other things besides food scraps that you could be recycling or could be composting or could be added to compost, like newspapers or things along those lines. So
right, the brown matter.
Yeah.
Right.
So depending on what you look at, there's...
It probably inches up towards 25-30%.
Yeah.
So you all down in Gowanus, tell us about your lot that we had a chance to go visit and what you're doing that's different from the Grow New York City composting.
Well, the difference between Grow NYC and what we're doing is we're actually composting material. We have a site
right.
With DSNY.
Uh-huh.
And so we're down there actually able to produce a very quality product from food scraps. And I think, you know, Jeff can talk about the landscape itself.
The landscape yeah. or waste.
Yeah. Well, so we have a small section of a DSNY salt lot, which
right.
where the where they store the salt for paving or for clearing snow and everything. Over
right.
the winter.
And this is right, just so our listeners understand, this is in industrial Brooklyn, right on the canal.
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty beautiful. The location is
I think it's beautiful.
Spectacular.
From a certain perspective.
Yeah.
I love it. I call it the Wild Wild West. I've like found myself dressing more like a cowboy now that I go down there. So I'm like,
but I didn't notice any salt there yet. They haven't gotten
there.
Oh,
it's there now.
Oh, it's, I was going to say, when we were there a couple of weeks ago, there was no salt, but I was like, I'm waiting for the big mountain to come.
Well, that's kind of the beauty of our situation in some ways is that the salt lot is underused 9 months out of the year when there's no snow.
Right.
The DSNY does have some things coming in and out of there throughout the year, but for the most part, there's not a lot of action there.
It's beautiful, empty land.
Yeah.
Waterfront land.
Yeah. So let's use it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
totally.
Let's not put a condo on it. Let's make a park, like something useful out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and the Gowanus Conservancy has already started to landscape that area a little bit. We have a street end garden there, and then we've done some landscaping along the entire edge of the canal that's running along the river.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, it's starting to take shape, and you can start to see these ideas of what these spaces could be with our infrastructure of a composting facility, the rain gardens that have put in to help prevent more waste from going into the canal.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of little things that people are able to do on a small scale that makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so you guys have like a little storage unit for your supplies and your shovels and your rakes and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you have how many compost bins are there?
We have 5 cubic yard bins from pallets that we've, you know, they're everywhere down in the canal. You just pick one up,
right.
toss some nails in it, and you've got a bin. So that's right. how we started.
Okay. And you guys get, where do you get your waste from? Tell us about that, because that's a pretty interesting story.
Well, my next door neighbor is a regular attendee of Southside Coffee. And I went over there one day back in March and said, hey, you guys want to start composting with Gowanus? Mm-hmm. They're like, absolutely, you know. So from that, we, you know, the owner of Southside also part owns Lot 2 restaurant. Mm-hmm. So they got on board. We got them buckets, and we started hauling it on bicycle trailers.
On bicycles, so, right. Yeah. I love that.
On a weekly basis, you can see me frantically rolling down the streets with, a load of buckets on the back. But hey, you know, you got to start somewhere small.
That's right.
And get it going.
And less carbon footprint, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. Hang on. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to We Dig Plants. You were just listening to Surf the Wild Gowanus. Alice, you find the most amazing songs that relate to our topic.
Just an iTunes search.
By Simon Charchet and Bar Sinister, Surf the Wild Gowanus. It seems like a good song.
Well, there's a lot of artists doing work down there.
Yeah.
So many.
Yeah.
So we were just talking about composting coffee and food scraps. And full disclosure, Alice and I just started partnering with Eric and Jeff. Mm-hmm. Trying to introduce some, the green part of the waste, right? The leaf clippings and things like that to balance out the
We have so much brown landscape waste, you know, from garden cleanups. And what we were doing is bagging it up and then paying
to cart it.
Some schmo to come and pick it up. And that seemed really silly for years. We were looking for a local group to partner with, and then here you
and nobody wants it. Nobody, you know, we approach the botanic garden. Nobody wants, and you'd think they'd want it, you know, but nobody did. It's a challenge,
and that's truly what our project started out of. Was we couldn't send our scraps, our own weeds anywhere. So
right. What do you do with it?
The necessity was there to, well, you know, we have to compost it ourselves. And That's what the whole project kind of stems out of.
Herein lies a major initiative. Right.
And that is, everyone has that story of how do we stop doing what we're doing right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So where does it stand right now with your relationship under the umbrella organization of the Conservancy, but then you're using New York City land that's technically owned by Department of Sanitation? Talk for a minute about that if you can, because that's
well, I mean,
the hardest thing is finding space.
Absolutely. And we are grateful to be on that spot. And we thank DSNY every day to be there. We cannot do what we do without having a space to hub ourselves on. So, you know, and it just came from swinging by, seeing the space and getting in touch with the people who own it.
That's a long process, too, to navigate through the bureaucracy.
And many thanks to Andy, our chairman, and Hans, who have done tremendous, have put forth a lot of work to get that, to secure that spot.
Yeah, so.
Well, Alice and I have found over the years of living in New York all these years, you know, New York is huge, but it's really small. And we find that Brooklyn is really a small town. It operates like a small town. It's, you know, just knowing the right person. And then suddenly, like, the doors open. You know, there's like a struggle and a battle. And then the right person says yes. And it happens, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that, you know, it's kind of always working that way.
It's a New York story.
So, Eric, I want you to put on your landscape architect's hat for a minute. Because we've been talking about the past of the Gowanus Canal and what's happening. And we want to talk a little bit about the future. There's lots of different plans out there. One is the Gowanus Sponge Park plan. Tell us about, you know, now that you have time into it and some experience and with your landscape architecture background, what do you think, you know, in your opinion, is a good plan and a good way
if you were given the commission.
Yeah. You could do whatever you wanted to do down there and the budget to do it. What would you do?
Well, I mean, I think that they've done a great job in looking at let's clean the water that's going into the canal right now. Mm-hmm. So that's a great thing. Let's start capturing that water and cleaning it, keeping it clean before it's going in. But everyone's going to say but, and we can all point fingers. But, you know, I would say, and one of the things my criticisms in within landscape architecture is where does infrastructure start to fit into the future of design? We're concerned about the aesthetic beauty and those things, but gardens have the ability to clean and cleanse, and that's an infrastructural value mm-hmm. that should be assessed mm-hmm. and should be designed into it, no matter what that landscape architect's thought is on the landscape. So I would put in some compost bins.
Start small,
right?
Build big.
I really think that the challenge is just in the multiple ownership of all these pieces of land. How can you implement something and work with who's there? It's the ongoing battle of,
because it's a mixed neighborhood. It's residential. It's industrial. And it's very old. I mean, the canal was built in the mid to late 1800s. Is that right?
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's being gentrified slowly mm-hmm. on either kind of bookend, you mm-hmm, know. Yeah. And I mean, those were always established residential neighborhoods with this industrial neighborhood right in the middle. But now people, artists, you know, it's starting, just because of real estate too, they're starting to kind of seep in to that neighborhood. Pardon that bad pun.
But I mean, there's concrete plants there. You know, daily when Alice and I go to our space, there's the big scrap metal, you know.
Isn't that loading into a bar?
I watch that all the time. I can watch that giant, like, it's just arm
throwing.
I'm just curious how much of that's going right into the canal.
I know. Yeah. It's supposed to be on the barge.
Yeah.
But then also, just for our non-New York listeners, the F train subway goes right over the top of this. Mm-hmm. So visually, it's a very interesting piece of property. Mm-hmm. And what's the square footage of the...
We've got 3/4 acre. So
you all,
yep.
The composting project, have 3/4.
No, the whole that whole... spot that we're on is 3/4 acre.
The salt.
Wow. It seems a lot bigger. I guess
a it's a
New York scale.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
York
yeah.
scale. 3/4 acre is a lot of land in New York City.
That's, yes, it is.
We're land rich.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But what's the total distance of the canal?
The canal is 1.8 miles.
1.8 miles. Yeah. So that's a lot of land to develop and think about use for, and gardens, right.
and I
residential.
Would, and I would say residential is going to help the area, but you know, the environmental issue is so prominent that can you really promote development there before it's clean?
Exactly. Exactly.
Did it get designated a Superfund site?
Yes.
It did.
It yeah. did.
So what are the implications of that for...
It means it's really
as
polluted,
you understand.
We
it.
All, yeah, we all agree on that. It's really bad, and something needs to be done. So what's happening now? What I've observed happening, just being down there, is they're collecting data on
okay.
the actual contaminants. They're looking at potential ways to handle that, where to take it. I mean, once you can dredge the canal,
dredge it,
and then
right.
once you dredge that, what do you do with all of the silt and
right.
stuff that you take out?
And the off-gassing.
Right.
That? Yeah, the off-gassing, like, how do you deal with that? And then beyond the actual, just the canal itself, you have all this residual pollution and all of the land that's around it. So, for instance, Lowe's has a facility there now. There's a store off 9th Street.
Yeah.
And they had to do some remediation work in that land themselves.
Right. Before they could even build.
Do anything.
Yeah, they're right up against the water mm-hmm. there with their yeah. big
and
parking
lot. And Whole Foods is embarking on that same issue. I think that's kind of what the struggle with Whole Foods, because I know they have that plot, but they're kind of
it's been
trying
years.
To determine...
Right.
whose responsibility the cleanup should be.
And I think the Superfund has some implications on that. So
right.
there's more delays now. So
it's a big political situation.
And it's incredibly difficult to do that work. I mean, to get years and years of oil and noxious things out of the ground is just...
Right.
There was some discussion about capping it, right? Putting like a layer of clay over it. Mm-hmm. So
in sections, yeah.
That's what they do at landfills.
Yeah. Right. So, that's one of the ways that you can start to deal with the contaminants and keeping them out of things. But what it does is it encapsulates them, and they'll be there. For, so that cap, right. you'll have to replace years
yeah,
later.
What's the lifespan of that? Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's one of these things that the more I look at these issues, I see that, you know, once the chemicals are there, you're going to have a really hard time getting them out.
Right.
And I think people's attitudes don't fully understand that yet. As far as a lot of people have this idea of remediation, like, oh, we can just get it out. But it's that process is far more complicated than putting it in.
Right, exactly. And then the money. I mean, we're talking huge billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So who's responsible for that? You know, because these are companies that
are
long gone. So it's not like you can just go back to, you know, X, Y, and Z.
And as Eric was saying, it's still being dumped into.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, let's be positive, though, for a second. And let's talk about, I don't know quite the statistics on this, but I know the oyster population has grown in those waters because of the filtration system.
Once they restored the filtration system, a lot, there's been a lot that's come back.
Yeah. Not edible.
Don't go
non-edible
in the canal.
but it's good to see.
Yeah. I see lots of life down there in general. Mm-hmm. There's cormorants. There's two cormorants that live really close in that area. They're always flying around and frantic mm-hmm. about something. The weed
frantic about the pollutants that are in their water.
Indignant. Clean this up.
Hey, humans. Hello.
The one thing that I've gotten really interested is in the weed population that exists there. There's a huge variety of plants that are existing down at the canal that have just taken hold there. They're vagabonds. And they've just moved in and said, this is ours. And so there's mugwort and Virginia creeper and on and
Artemisia
on.
Artemisia.
And obviously they can deal with the conditions.
Yeah.
And they're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny as I like to pick some of the things that are more pretty, but then it's like, these are contaminated.
Yeah.
Bring it home.
Yeah. You're not going to be eating these. Yeah. No. There's no mustard greens from that.
I read that there is even white perch, herring, striped bass, crabs, jellyfish, and even anchovies have started to
populate it.
Come back.
Yeah.
I've seen the fiddler crabs down there in the summer, and
they're cool.
Fun to watch because they're just these little guys playing
their
fiddle.
Yeah.
Life does exist.
Right. So what's the future then of your composting project?
Well, I think we hope to scale it up. We hope I would hope that it's not just your typical compost facility, but it's tied directly to education and research development. You know, if we're looking at green jobs in the future, technology is a strong component of that. And I think that Jeff and I both have some really good ideas going forward with how to go about doing that. So we need to get our funding. And once we get that, I think we can go full steam and make it really cool.
And when did you move onto the lot? Just recently, right? It hasn't.
We've had that shipping container, I believe, since 2009.
Okay.
So the compost program started this summer.
Right. Okay. Cool.
So, but you know, we would love to see the site become a master composter training place.
Right.
You know, like let's bring kids down here and let's teach them what this is and get them their certificates there.
Right.
And I think hopefully we're setting a precedent if we can continue to build on the momentum that we have and expand our program, that we can build a precedent for community-based, ecologically-based composting programs throughout the city. So you can imagine one in Newtown Creek. You can imagine one, you know, and all over.
In the Bronx.
People shouldn't have to haul it far. I mean, honestly, we have a lot of clients and we wish that we could just compost on site. Unfortunately, you know.
It doesn't always work.
It doesn't work. Land is at a premium and people won't pay attention to it and do the work.
And they don't want to see it.
And they,
I mean, fact is, nobody wants messiness in New York City. Nobody wants it.
That's why we're proponents of community-supported composting.
Right.
And
CSC.
Right there, CSC. and what that is, you know, there are experts that want to compost. So if you don't want to do it, just bring it to us. We do want to do it. And it's fun. So.
Right.
And you guys need some volunteers.
We need tons of volunteers sometimes.
It's a lot of labor.
But it's a labor of love, and it really feels good to turn some compost.
So let's talk for a second about some tips that you all can offer home gardeners.
Based on your experience doing it larger scale.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of...
black gold, some might call compost. Yeah.
There's the important thing to keep in mind is that you're making a recipe. You're putting together different things. You need certain components to put in. So you have to get that balance right. And there's a lot of ways to tell that, you know, if you have certain smells and you have, you know, things are looking a certain way. There's a lot of things to go off of. And so part of it, and part of even what we're doing now, is experimenting a little bit, finding the right blend of things that you have available, things that are around. If you have a bunch of leaves and a bunch of food, you're in good shape. These are things that you need. Put them together and, you know, start seeing what comes about. But there's a lot of great resources online and in the neighborhood. And you can come visit us and we'll...
wherever you're at, if you're in a... whatever your state is, you just need to go to Google, type in the name of your state and extension and find out what they have, what information they have available about composting. For New York, go to Cornell's website, Cornell Waste Management Institute. Amazing, full of resources. And that gets you started. But seriously, I started seven and a half years ago. My mom gave me a book called Worms Eat My Garbage by Mary Appelhoff. And I didn't at the time, I didn't know how amazing that book was going to be, but it has influenced every step of the way in what I believe composting is. And that's a good starter book. You read it at night and you'll be composting tomorrow.
That's great. That's good. One interesting thing about worms and New York City kids is Carmen and I have done a lot of kind of community projects, and getting a New York City school kid to see the value of a worm is amazing. And when they first see it, you know, they're like squealing and, oh my God, what is this thing? And then to realize the usefulness and the purpose, and they just love them, you know? Yeah. And I remember, of course, growing up as a kid and daring my friend to eat them and, you know, just all that like kid stuff.
Yeah, my husband would eat them for $1, $2 if he chewed.
Yeah.
But that's Kansas. It's not New York City.
Anyway.
I think it costs more in New York City, right?
Yeah, probably.
They're at Whole Foods. No, I'm just kidding.
Maybe that's how we get funded.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
A worm eating contest?
Yeah,
Stranger things have been done.
Well, there was a good children's book called How to Eat Fried Worms, which is a great book.
I do
book.
Remember that one.
Yeah.
We have plenty of worms down at the lot, so...
Yeah.
We could start.
That would be a good book event. That would be a good book event fundraiser for you guys.
Yeah.
So... All right, guys, we have to wrap it up for today. You've been listening to Heritage Radio Network and We Dig Plants. And we had some great guests from Compost Gowanus under the Gowanus Conservancy. We were talking all about industrial waste and composting and land use, and a lot of topics were touched on. But we encourage our listeners to go to the website, gowanusconservancy.org, right, and learn more and volunteer. And if you're not in Brooklyn per se, like Eric said, go to your state's extension agent.
Every state has them. You get lots of great resources and information.
Get involved. So,
well, you've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Our show is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. And a special thanks goes out to our sponsor, Fairway Market. If you miss any part of the show, please note it is available via archive on the website, heritageradionetwork.com, and via podcast on iTunes. Please leave comments and or join our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants, or visit our website, groundworksgardens.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Eric and Jeff, for
joining us.
Thank you. Thanks.
Following is a message from Jones Family Farms.
Jones Family Farms is a 400-acre working farm offering quality agricultural products all year round, from fresh summer berries to Christmas trees in the winter, and an award-winning winery that is open from April to December. The reach of the Jones Family Farms is hard to capture, from their advocacy work through the Working Lands Alliance to ongoing classes in the Harvest Kitchen. Jones Family Farms is as passionate about education as it is about farming. Whether you're picking fresh strawberries or exploring local wines, we hope you're inspired to learn more about Connecticut farming. Visit www.jonesfamilyfarms.com for more information.